Hello and welcome to Drilling Insight. I'm your host, Jeremy Verduzco, editor of National Driller Magazine. I'm joined today by drilling trainer, National Driller writer, and co-host Brock Yorby. Welcome, Brock.
Hey, Jeremy, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good today. And with us today also are Todd Tannehill and George Hugan of Setco Drilling Products. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thanks for having
us. Thank you for having us.
All right. Now, George and Todd both work for Setco Drilling Products as technical sales managers, and they've been in this industry for a long time, serving folks for their mud needs. So we thought it would be great to get them on for a conversation about all things mud. So thanks for joining us, gentlemen. And first off, tell the audience a little bit about yourselves.
All right. I started out working with drilling fluids 2 days after I graduated from high school, January the 11th, 1977. I went to work for a company called Milchem. They had a drilling fluids division, and I started working with them in the solids control division. So I've got over 43 years of experience with drilling fluids. They put me through a mud school when I was with Milchem. And then later on, I went to work, before Setco, I was working for Tulsa Rig Iron. They manufactured horizontal directional drills and the drilling fluids recycling equipment. And they were also a Setco distributor. And they sent me to a mud school in Red Lodge, Montana that Setco was putting on and back in 97.
Okay.
And that's when I decided I wanted to go to work for Setco. And went to work for them in 2000, and on May the 16th, I celebrated my 20-year anniversary with Setco.
Nice.
Flies when you're having fun, George. Time flies when you're having fun. You forget how many years it is.
Oh, yeah.
So, go ahead, Todd.
Yeah, so I got in the drilling business. I left the Navy in 89. After two enlistments, and came out, tried a few things, ended up working for distribution in the water well side of things. And then from there, after finishing my college, I went to, I was actually customer service manager for a New England tank company for a little while, water well tank company, that is. And then worked for a national distributor, and that's when I got introduced to Setco, really. And decided that I wanted to go to work for Setco, and in 05 I came to work for them. So I've been with Setco in many different roles, from managing North America to managing Canada, and did a stint as the vice president of Setco for a little while. Mm-hmm. And left, came back, had a little brief hiatus, and came back about a year and a half ago as a technical sales manager covering the Northeast and Midwest.
Okay.
All right, so guys, you've given us a breakdown of your history. I love to ask the question, did the industry choose you or did you choose the industry? And let's start with Todd. I had met you as I was brand new to the industry on the manufacturer side, and you were a couple years in with Setco at that time, and you had said, yeah, I've been with the Navy, I've done some recruiting. So how the heck did you really get into the drilling industry?
Well, I said right out of the Navy, I was trying a few jobs, and I remember I was selling copy machines, burning my cars up and driving around, and I answered an ad for a distributorship for a water well distributor. And back then, the only thing I knew about water wells, mom said, don't spray the brick, you'll discolor it. So I ended up going to work for them. You know, he said, I'll give you X amount and a company vehicle. Do you want the job? And I went, yep. And then from then, I've been networking my way through the industry. People that I met along the way, people are awesome in this industry. I've got some drillers up in the New England area that really kind of held my hand and took me by the hand back then when I was a green neck or whatever, you know, just didn't have much experience. So it's been a real fun journey, but I would say it chose me. because I don't think I knew what I was signing up for, Brock.
All right, George, you said right out of high school, you decided I'm going to be a mud guy. How the heck did you know that there were mud jobs available?
My neighbor yelled over the fence while I was mowing the grass. He was a manager for Milcam Drilling Controls, and I was getting ready to graduate. And he says, "George, come over here." And he says, "What are you going to do?" I said, "I don't know. I'm thinking about maybe joining the Coast Guard." And he says, "You want to go to work in the oil field?" He said, "You get a company truck the first day." Okay. Damn, I was off and running. I started out sweeping the floors and helping the mechanics and delivering parts. Within 3 months, I was a field service technician. Within a year, they promoted me to operations manager and transferred me to West Texas. And I ran a branch out there for 3 years, generated enough business to open up a facility in Carlsbad, New Mexico, another one in Mineral Wells, Texas. And they promoted me to the corporate office as an international technical advisor. So I was off and running.
Awesome.
Okay, so both of you have been working with fluids for a while now. How have products that drillers use changed over time? Todd, let's start with you.
I think that they've really gotten a little bit more sophisticated. It's pretty amazing how, you know, we used to just talk about clays and how to treat clays with a synthetic polymer. And now we're getting down to the degrees of the clay. You know, is it sticky? Is it swelling? Tell me about the clay. What's it doing? And we just have different ways of going about things. So I think the products have become more sophisticated as companies like ours and our competitors put more and more money into research and development. You know, there's kind of an old joke in the industry that we can make anything you want, anything. It's just whether the industry is willing to pay for it. So we have to find that balance between what can the industry actually afford to use, mm-hmm. and we actually develop in that range. Otherwise, we could make some nifty, cool stuff that could be used that probably just wouldn't be affordable for us to go out and do jobs with. And,
yeah.
I saw Brock giving me the heads up there, because I think we all know that, you know.
Yeah, so we have the super fluid here that we could sell you, but here's a credit application.
Well, it's not so much that. It's what can a job withstand. A lot of times the drilling fluids are the most underthought part of the job, much to our dismay, because they figure they're going to go in and drill, and I don't know how many times I've gone out on a job and we've needed to add polymers, and I've had somebody tell me that, you know, we didn't put that much money into the drilling fluids on the job, so we really can't do that. Is there another way to do it? And the answer is usually no. There's a way to do it.
Yeah. So, George, how have you seen products evolve?
Well, it's been pretty amazing. I remember when I first started with Tulsa Rig Iron, that was my introduction to the horizontal direction of the drilling industry. You'd see these big river crossing rigs out there with nothing but high yield bentonite, no soda ash, no additives. There was no science behind what they were doing. And nowadays, they just couldn't get away with that. Pipeline companies are wanting people to have them. Somebody testing their fluids on site and all that. And in the course of, like, we worked with a lot of contractors, big river crossing contractors, training them how to run the mud testing equipment. And it helped them get a better understanding of their fluids. And be it water well or horizontal directional drilling, there's more of a focus on getting all of the properties you need out of a drilling fluid at a lower viscosity, therefore reducing annular pressures and all that stuff. So there's been a lot of focus on that. They've got, you know, the extra low of this and extra low of that. It's just a lot nicer products out there that really help contractors out do their job more efficiently, and less annular pressures, less frack outs for horizontal guys, and better circulation rates for the vertical guys, and you know, is constantly evolving. Like now we've got some really amazing products for not just the drilling fluids, but even the for drilling spoils disposal, which is becoming a huge issue. And some really nice options for them now that wasn't available just a few years ago. And so it's kind of neat to see how it's evolving.
So you've thrown out a bunch of technical terms, you know, and we got a lot of guys out in the industry, you know, it's, we joke often about it being drilling mud or drilling fluid. And you're talking about, you know, our pressures, our fracture gradients. I'm curious what, you know, you're both technical sales managers and you have all sorts of great people throughout the country. What is Setco's process for a training program? You said you went through the one, you have base because you've been through two different mud companies. I'd like to hear from both of you guys your experience with the training program that Setco offers.
Yeah, so, go ahead, George.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, I went through the Red Lodge Montana Mud School. I've been through quite a few Setco mud schools that they put on, and I've been, you know, I put on a lot of them. Instead of like some of the other majors, though, having the big central mud school at their headquarters and all that, we tend to do our training on more of a regional level. That way it keeps us lighter on our feet and we can, it's easier for people to go to people than have them come to us. So people like Todd and I, I average somewhere around 36 training seminars a year. No, wait, it's 26 to 30 training seminars a year. I used to keep count of it, and that's about what I averaged of what I was doing. And just focusing it on the type of contractors and designing it for what they're looking for, and it kind of makes it nice.
Todd?
So, well, everything George said, obviously, we work for the same company. We do these mud schools all over. I, too, went through their Red Lodge Montana mud school back when I started their advanced mud school. But we also make sure that our people don't go straight out in the field. I can remember hiring a gentleman one time, and we basically kept him in the field, but we kept him out of the calling on working alone. They're more likely working with an experienced guy. And just like a lot of the drillers pass their knowledge on, a lot of the mud guys will pass that knowledge on too.
Absolutely.
I want to just highlight that. So back in 2014, we merged with Minerals Technology. And Minerals Technology is Setco's parent company now. That's a $1.8 billion company, and they have a huge resources of research and development. So we have all of that at our disposal at our plants around the world. And we have some really great people in those departments that are working with us and help train us up. But I think that the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway from this is that this industry, right when you think you got your training, this industry will slap you. You'll learn something new every day. And I think that's the greatest thing about what we do.
Okay. So that segues nicely into my next question. So a lot of veteran drillers out there, they think they have mud all figured out. What are the veterans missing? What are the kind of common errors you see among people who think they know it all about drilling mud?
Well, can I go back to, I'll actually piggyback on another question that you asked earlier, and that was how products changed. And I think that the problem is that when people figure out their mix or what they're comfortable using, they like to use this one certain type of pack or this one polymer. They get comfortable using that, and because of that, sometimes they don't try some of the newer products that are out there. You know, there's a joke out there, I like vanilla ice cream until I found out there was chocolate. My point is that I think that sometimes they need to just try them to see if they might work better, or at least different. And they might actually simplify their lives and find something that they like better than their old fail-safe.
Mm-hmm. So maybe a little experimentation with some of the offerings out there, you know, depending on local geology and such.
Yes.
Okay. George, what do you think? What are the veterans missing?
You know, if they show up at the, like a veteran water well drillers, if they show up at all the trade shows and the continuing education classes, they can pick up a lot. But a lot of them that have their nose to the grindstone, they'll kind of miss out on a lot of this new technology. You go out on a job with them and they're getting into bad clay and they're trying to run a long chain, high molecular weight synthetic polymer to inhibit the clays. And you say, you know, all of the mud companies now have a low viscosity version of this, that clay inhibitor that's going to control your clay and not blind your screens. Or, hey, we got this low, everybody has a low viscosity packs out that's been out for years. You should really try those. You know, you get the same benefit of the fluid loss control, but without all of viscosity, you know, things like that. It's, and I think that's where it's nice to get out and be in the field with these guys and you can see what they're doing and say, and make these suggestions like that. Hey, bring them up to speed of with some of the latest technology out there. I remember one time I was in Florida on a horizontal job testing a new a bentonite fluid that we had, and while the contractor was drilling, we're waiting for him to empty his first tank, a horizontal job, and we're talking to him, and he's giving me a lecture of how everything he knows about drilling fluids he had to learn on his own, but he doesn't have any problems with his drilling fluids. And while he's talking, I'm looking down at his entry pit, and by the time he puts another rod on, the fluid in his entry pit has soaked in through the sand. And so I knew that he was just running bentonite, no soda ash, very hard water out there, and no additives or anything. So I could tell what was going on. And when I pulled out all my test equipment, getting ready for this trial with the other stuff, you know, he was blown away. Hey, can you test my mud? And I tested it, and the water loss, you couldn't even measure it, you know. And by the time I left the job site, we switched over to our fluid and just ran the bentonite, same dosage as the other one. The only difference is we added a soda ash. And all of a sudden, it started carrying the cuttings out of the hole, and the fluid wasn't soaking into the ground. And by the time I left, this guy was ready for me to go do a mud school, you know. So a lot of times, these guys just don't realize what they're missing out on. And I think when it comes to mud guys being out on a job site, you can, like I said, get these guys up to date and up to speed on it. You just got to not shove it down their throat. Just have a nice way of showing them there's some other stuff out here you got to try to really help you out, you know.
Yeah, let them find it.
So, Todd, what's your favorite go-to advice to give new drillers when it comes to when you first step out of the truck? You know, and you're walking up there, what's one of the best, you know, comment that, you know, has that glass breaking effect where the guys on the site go, oh, and you know, it's going to be a good day.
You know, it's not a glass breaking effect, Brock, but any of us who have taught mud schools, we start the same way. We start with the basics. We start with that 90%, 90, 95% of the fluid is made up of the water. And a lot of times we can tell right on the phone when a driller calls that the problems that we're having are being caused by poor makeup water. And a lot of times people forget that step. They just don't. It's the simplest step. It's the least expensive to treat. And it can solve so many problems out on the job site, whether it's a horizontal job, even a vertical job. It doesn't really matter. These products are all developed. They need good water to perform. And we've had situations where, you know, guys are saying, oh, the water's fine, I'm using city water, and I'm pulling out of the fire hydrant. Well, guess what? The towns are broke. They don't flush their fire hydrants anymore, and you're running pure rust on that first tank of water that you're running unless you're flushing. So we, honestly, the first thing that we analyze, number one, is what's the makeup water like? Where are we at? And I know that sounds redundant, and you can see people in our mud schools, their eyes will kind of glass over a little bit because all of us, all my competition and us, we talk about water first. And at the end of the day, when we start talking about what that water does, you know, bentonite separating out or fish eyes or whatever, or the pump making noise, or you name it. At the end of the day, all of a sudden you see the light bulb go on their head and you go, they go, oh, I wonder if that's why I'm having that problem. And so sometimes it's kind of stepping back and starting from first base again and going, okay, where do we start? You know?
All right, George, how about you? What's your favorite go-to advice?
To understand, well, the soda ash is always the ground floor. And number two, understand that different soils react differently. Understand the soil conditions, what's going to happen in it, in these various soil conditions, and how to control that. Let the fluids control the ground conditions instead of ground conditions controlling your drilling, and you're way ahead of the game. Match your fluid to the soil conditions. And I'll take a plastic water bottle, grab a handful of the stuff they're drilling through, and throw it in a container in a plastic water bottle filled with water, and show them how clay and sand react differently and how to control that, you know. And it really helps them out. Cup testing, give them a good visual, you know. And that'll take them a long ways.
All right. Beyond that, you guys have been in this industry a long time. And I know from, you know, answering the same type of phone calls you guys have got, I always love this discussion over, you know, craft beer somewhere at a show or wine with George. And, you know, what's the craziest phone call you've gotten about your products? It doesn't have to be drilling related. You know, once I had a Hollywood exec call and go, I need clean mud. You know, what type of phone calls have you gotten, George? We'll start with you. That's just that most memorable, like, are we really talking about this right now?
I don't know. I had one contractor that was going to drill, that they actually wound up doing that, drilling in at a phosphate mine, putting in horizontal wells to recover phosphoric acid. What kind of drilling fluid you got that's going to work in phosphoric acid? Dude, guar gum worked like magic out there. Guar gum held up, you know.
Sure.
Bentonite was completely out of the question.
No.
Synthetic polymers, no, that's not going to work. It's going to tear that up. Good old-fashioned guar gum, 100%, or as we say in Louisiana, is biodegradable. You could throw it in the bayou and it don't hurt nothing. But it worked. That was kind of an interesting project. It's like, you know, okay. You know, that, but it throws, I love stuff like that, that throws you for a loop. You got to get out of the box, you know, to make it something, find something that's going to work for it, you know. And that one did.
All right, Todd, on the East Coast, I'm sure you've got this water. Yeah, this water's not working. What do you got?
You know, you only got a little time on here, so I got to pick one. So while he's talking, I'm going through them all. But, you know, I think some of the craziest things aren't caught on. We're not seeing them from drillers. We're seeing them from the specs of the actual job, if that makes sense. It's kind of like when they want the drill rod to go down and then hard right, right? I think one of the ones that stick out the most, because we get them a lot, is people that are doing environmental drilling, and they're being told that they can't use any polymers whatsoever, and yet they're in sticky clay. And it's like, okay, wait a minute. You know, somebody's got to go talk to the engineer or the specifier here, because we can't, it's almost impossible to complete this hole without putting something down there to help complete it. So I think sometimes we're a victim of the spec, if that's a thing.
Sure.
So you guys have been, you know, as we've discussed, in this industry for decades. What have you've worked in a lot of different drilling sectors, advised a lot of drillers all over the place. What is your favorite type of drilling? Is it water well, HDD, geothermal? What do you get excited about?
I get excited about being able to work in all these different fields, you know? I think it keeps you from getting stuck in a rut. One day I may be in St. Augustine, Florida on a 6,100 foot shot where they're going underneath the Intercoastal Canal underneath the saltwater marsh, punching out on the Barrier Island and pulling back 6,100 foot of 20 inch steel for a water main for that Barrier Island so they could develop it. Or you're at Vandenberg Air Force Base on a 12 foot diameter shaft that's 185 foot deep in gravel and cobble and sand. They're making this big bridge. I love the variety. I think that's what has made this job so much fun. It keeps you thinking. It keeps you studying and you're always learning with all these different types of drilling projects. You know, you might be out in the field one day, out in a grape orchard on a big water well job in Napa. You know, or drilling under on a barge out in San Francisco Bay. God, it's the greatest job in the world.
Yeah, it could be anything. What about you, Todd?
You know, when the phone rings, it's kind of like a fire bell. You don't know what the emergency is, but there's probably an emergency at the other end. So I think it's the how spontaneous the industry is. I cut my teeth on water well, but honestly, I think I get a lot of enjoyment out of working on the HDD. They have a unique set of problems, you know. In the HDD industry, and when you can get that bore back successfully with a team on site, it's a real good feeling.
And I might add to what Todd said, you can never get tired of watching that bit come out of the ground and hit its target. I've been doing that for all of these years now. It's still amazing.
It's like magic. Yeah,
it's still cool.
Well, I what you guys have just said and your passion about the industry, you know, we are a self-taught tribal industry. And then, you know, we have mud men come on site. You know, we have regulators come on site. We have solids control technicians come on site. And we have this technical aspect that we bring to the field that, you know, this family who's hired through nepotism and the neighbor yelled over the fence, "Hey, let's go do this." You know, is there, and they're like, what are these guys going to say today? Tell me about a situation, and we'll start with Todd, of, you know, a catastrophic job that you're like, I'm not looking forward to how this is and how it turned out successful. I know you got a couple good stories, and I know George has definitely got some.
Well, I do have a couple good ones. So the first one I'll give you is that, you know, I'll never forget the feeling of going out on a job up in Canada, and they were stuck. Some really hard clay, some really, really swelling clay, and they just couldn't get their rotation back at all. And I remember when we broke rods, we slugged in some clay cutters, some emulsifier, and just really slugged it hard. And when they started back up, slowly but surely, they started turning and started pulling back. And it started pulling back faster than I was comfortable with. And I remember walking the bore line, Brock, and I got down to the other end because I just wanted to see the pipe reel moving, because I could have swore he broke off. He was moving so clear. So yeah. Sometimes when they're real stuck and we get them unstuck, that's a great feeling, you know. But I think my best story is that drilling fluid follows the path of least resistance. And I'll never forget a job that was being done up in the upstate New York region. And we were drilling, and all of a sudden we didn't get any returns back. We lost our returns, and it lost it like flushing a toilet. You and I both know that if you lose them fast, they went somewhere, you're probably not gonna get them back, you know? And so I remember going up, and I was just trying to figure out where it was. There was no frack out or anything like that. And suddenly I saw this fuzzy bunny come running out of her house. She had a pink bathrobe on and fuzzy bunny slippers, or fuzzy slippers at least. And she came running out talking about her basement was filling up with mud. And, or she didn't say that. She said there was gray sludge. And I remember having to calm the homeowner down. What had happened was fluids take the path of least resistance. They had put water pipes into these old foundation houses where they just chipped out a hole and then put a little cement patch around. Over the years, that was gone. And the drilling fluid found it was easier to go up that water pipe and into the basement. And Brock, that was the first time I ever reached down and took a finger full of bentonite clay and ate it to show the homeowner it was safe.
That's great. Hey, George, same question.
Okay. I was down riding with a distributor in the Leon, Guanajuato area of Mexico. And all of a sudden he got a phone call. We had a driller in distress. We got out there, the guy's drilling a big community well. And they were stuck at like 1,300 foot deep. The soil conditions, a lot of gravel. And he was using this, the Mexican bentonite. It's pink in color, no filtration control at all, no gel strength to it at all. And then he had a little duplex pump like you, that was his mud pump, like you would use for a small residential water well. He's trying to use that on a well that was like on a drilling project. I think it was 18 or 20 inch diameter hole, and he's got this poor little old duplex, no annular ascending velocity whatsoever. And I told him, I said, he says, well, what do you think is wrong? I said, no offense, but you should have asked me what do I think is right. Even his mud recycling system wasn't working, and they had a jerry rig. And so we had to start from scratch. Okay. We broke out the calculator and worked out the annular ascending velocity equations. So he had to bring some more mud pumps out. Then my distributor got him some good Wyoming bentonite out there. We got him some additives and all that stuff. Surprisingly, he got unstuck. I thought, man, there's no way this guy's going to get out of it, because that gravel's probably packed for, you know, 1,000 foot of drill, packed around 1,000 foot of drill pipe. He got out of it and got the job done, you know, followed our recommendations. Like, man, I would not have put money on that, man. But they got it. I was kind of pleased with that, you know.
Wow. Wow. Great story. So, if I wanted to break into the industry, if I wanted to become a mud man, like when you guys, you know, what advice would you give me? Let's start with Todd.
Mud person. Mud person these days.
Mud person, yes.
Yeah, and actually, some people not even using the word mud anymore. They want to use the word drilling fluids too. But
okay.
Let's say you wanted to break into the industry. I would tell you to keep an open mind.
Okay.
I would tell you to keep learning. Because just like we said, you know, some of the issues are with veteran people that they're using the same mix over and over and over again. Sometimes mud drilling fluid, people like us, we get into those ruts also. And it's easy once we have a proven recipe to just keep knocking things out. I would say all of us, from the territory regional technical guys for all the drilling mud companies, to the contractors, to the engineers, especially the engineers, since they're the start of the spec, need to keep up on their continuing education on new products coming out. And you need to keep learning all the time. If you ever show up at the job, any job, whether you're a mud guy or not, and you can't learn anything, I have time for you to leave.
Yeah, yeah. George, same question.
Well, and especially when you do what do what Todd and I do, it takes so much more, because you're a technical guy for the drilling fluids. You're managing a large distributor network, and you're teaching continuing education classes. You're writing magazine articles. You're doing so many things. It's really tough to find people that can cover that broad of a spectrum, that can go out and speak publicly in front of people, and that can develop good interpersonal relationships with the contractors and the distributors and all that. There's so much that encompasses what we do. You know, if it was just checking mud, it would be so easy, you know, but that, I think that's the fun of this job. You know, somebody has to be a self-starter, because nobody's around to breathe down your back. Nobody can follow you around and tell you what to do, when to do it, and all that. You've got to be a self-starter. You got to have a good technical mind and understand the physics of what's going on and the chemistry behind it and all that stuff. It takes somebody pretty well-rounded to do what we do.
Okay. So knowing all that, Todd had another point.
I don't mean girl.
I was just going to say, so knowing all that, Jeremy, should we expect your resume?
Yeah, maybe soon. I'm hoping my publisher doesn't know I'm looking for a job as a mod person.
We won't tell a soul.
This is probably quiet.
So, all right, Brock, last question from you.
Oh. All right, off the cuff, mud test. George, what's your favorite mud test?
You know, it's going to sound crazy, but I think the one that I do the most when I'm on a job site, and I always tell guys, I'm looking at the recycling system behind you. When somebody's running a recycling system, I tell them, every 15 minutes you should be picking up that viscosity funnel and cup, because, you know, you're on a horizontal directional board and sand, for instance, a 55 viscosity, you could own that sand. 45 viscosity, you could lose it.
Yeah.
And you can't visibly see a 10-second change in mud.
Sure.
You always run into these guys that, oh, I could look at that mud and tell you, and I tell them, no. I've been doing this for 43 years. I never trust my eyes. I usually have that viscosity funnel and cup right there, and I'm on that because that's your quality control that's going to keep that job going, you know, be it vertical or horizontal.
Yeah, especially with, you know, shear degradation and those type of things happening. And there's so much, a fluid is a system. So it's circulating. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a beautiful point with the funnel viscosity. Todd.
You got water coming and going. You got mud coming and going. Everything's happening. And just like that, it could change, you know?
Yeah.
I think the tests that really can show you what's going on downhole a lot too is the filter cake, testing the filter cake with the filter press. And showing them what their filter cake actually looks like down there, showing them how that, if it's real fluffy and it's sticking, you know, out like this, that those passing cuttings are just kind of ripping it apart. But showing them how that nice thin filter cake is what they want. And I think once they start to understand that, the whole mud program starts to come together.
And you know, when you run that fluid loss test in front of contractors that have never seen that before, it really clicks to them. You know, I explain how that that fluid loss directly equates to how good you're going to have that, keep that hole open. And that really does an impact, has a positive impact on them when they see that test.
Yeah, and Brock, you know as well as we do that a fluid, if it reacts well in a cup in front of you, it's going to be doing about the same thing down there too. So just a great way to test suspension and everything and just kind of show what's going on downhole. It's none of this is magic. It's all very predictable.
I like sand content. I like shaking the sand content over my head.
And the testing is for sure important for HD, where gravities can really quickly get the better of you.
You can.
You know what I like doing? Is when I'm on a job site, I always talk about this, but I take a water bottle, cut the top off because there's always water bottles lying all over the place. Grab your fluid, like on a horizontal job. I tell the contractors, do this. Grab your fluid you're drilling with and the soil you're drilling through, mix them together. Set it down. If it settles in that cup, it's going to settle down. You're going to stretch product line, frack out, or something like that. There's nothing scientific about it, but it's 100% accurate, you know?
Yeah.
And you can tell so much about how your fluid is interacting with your soils just by doing stuff like that.
We're talking mostly about HDD jobs, but there's even testing that we're doing on, you know, when we're out on geothermal jobs too. In the article that I wrote for National Driller that just came out, I believe, we talked about water and graphite, so there's a lot of testing the actual metering of the water and testing how accurate the meters are and everything. So there's no loss of the number of tests we can do on any type of job. They're a little different depending on the industry that we're out on that particular day.
Okay. Okay, well, with that, I think we're going to close out. Thanks, George and Todd, as always, for your expertise. Fluids are the circulatory system of many types of drilling, so it's great to hear a perspective from mud vets. So one thing that, you know, this is the silliest little thing, but going back, I think, George, I'm going to add Bayou degradable to my vocabulary. I just love that term. It's so, you know, it's so friendly and it's so illustrious, illustrative, and it really tells you what you're getting at with when you're describing a substance like that, you know, something that you could put your finger in and, you know, take a taste if you needed to prove a point.
You could take the Cajun out of the swamp, but you can't take the swamp out of the Cajun.
Yeah, Brock, what did you think?
You know, so many great points. You know, fluids are a system, just like you said, Jeremy, and the idea of, you know, proper being open-minded to all the great technologies coming out, you know, looking at testing and knowing that there's veterans out there, there's good organizations that you can pick up the phone and there's help. And, you know, that smartphone has made us all smarter when it comes to, as a community, being able to have a discussion about what's a lesson learned. And these two men right here are two guys you can call on and get some good, reliable information.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll wrap up today's episode. Thanks again to Todd and George for joining us. And tell us, where can the audience find out more about you?
They can go to our bios on setco.com. Also, they can reach us through there. There's links and numbers and email addresses there, too.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks again, and visit nationaldriller.com for the latest drilling news and for more videos like this one. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And see you next time on Drilling Insight. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys. It was fun.